And at this point, just a week ago when we did Easter, we had the celebration of the event of Christ from Good Friday's death into the start of a new week, the glorious Sunday morning that resurrection happened. Where today will be set will be Thursday night. Today is set in the evening before the crucifixion, the judgment. This is the time when the story climaxes at the death of the hero. So I would title this one, the I Am the True Vine, The Art of Staying Connected to a Living Faith in Uncertain Times. Simply because what we hear when we're starting to step into this part, because as John breaks down, you have from the end of chapter 12, beginning of chapter 13, until 18:1 are the last words of Jesus. A pretty good section of John is dedicated to the last night of the Last Supper, to where he's saying, what will life be like without me? That's actually what John 14, when Kevin spoke on I'm the way, the truth, and the light, intermingled within the rhetoric there, he said, I'm going away to my Father. I'm not going to be with you anymore. I'll send a helper. I'm going away. You're going to cry, and that's okay. But there's greater hope in me leaving than staying. And so you have this revolutionary buildup with the key person saying, by the way, when you start, I won't be there. Good luck. That can leave us in a bit of tension. So as we step into this, we're going to be speaking in that tension. The revolution that never started. The king that died before he could be crowned. The coronation service that ended on a cross. And we're going to be speaking about the notion of abiding, of presence, of staying. So in light of that, I'd like to practice a tradition that I've done here a few times, which is statio. It's an act of centering, taking a moment and a pause so that every point of the service doesn't just push up against each other every point of life. We take a moment to pause, to become present, so that we can listen to what the scripture says. So I'd say take 10 seconds to center yourself and be present. So as we step into this, we're going to step into the time when Jesus is just starting to get away from the table and disciples are walking away from Jerusalem. And as I like to practice, we'll go through the passage first. And so John 15:1, Jesus is just leaving and he says, I am the true vine and my Father is the gardener. He takes away every branch that does not produce fruit in me. He prunes every branch that produces fruit in me so that it'll produce more fruit. You are already clean because of the word that I've spoken to you. Remain in me and I'll remain in you. Just as a branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it remains in the vine, neither can you unless you remain in me. I am the vine and you are the branches. The one who remains in me and I in him will bear much fruit, because apart from me, you can accomplish nothing. If anyone does not remain in me, he is thrown out like a branch and dries up. Such branches are gathered up and thrown into the fire and are burned up. But if you remain in me and my words remain in you, ask whatever you want and it'll be done for you. This brings honor to my Father, that you would bear much fruit and show that you are my disciples. As the Father has loved me, I have also loved you. Remain in my love. If you obey my commandments, you remain in my love, just as I have obeyed my Father's commandments, remain in his love. I tell you these things so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. This is my commandment, that you love one another just as I have loved you. There is no greater love than this, that one lays down their life for their friends. And you are my friends if you do what I command. No longer do I call you slaves, for a slave does not understand what his master is doing. I call you friends, because I have revealed to you everything that I have heard the Father say. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you, that you should go and bear fruit that will remain. Then you'll ask the Father whatever you want in my name, and it'll be done for you. This is my commandment, that you love one another. This is happening as he's walking away from the temple. This is happening as he's leaving Jerusalem. So we're going to take a second to sit into the passage. Because when you hear, I am the true vine, for us, we take it to sometimes a spiritual level. And within that spiritual level, Jesus is a little bit like a white Gandhi. He's talking to someone off a ledge. Don't jump. He's soft-spoken and kind and sweet, hugs you with flowing Sassooned hair. But this would be a little more akin to the war movies you've seen, where you have that general before the last fight says, if you are with me, if you abide with me, if you stay with me, we can win this war. Just over that hill, there is death awaiting us, but we have it if you follow me. That would be the rhetoric that the disciples would be hearing. It is this moment of tension. They're coming from a night of the Exodus celebration with the Passover where God comes in and kills Egypt. They're coming from a time culturally when most revolutions are gathered in Jerusalem and announced during Passover, because this is the time we expect God to act. Which said that way, John's really weird pull a sword, cut off the guy's ear after Jesus has been so kind and soft-spoken makes a lot more sense. He's getting ramped up. Like, you're right, I'll die with you. I'll abide with you. We're charging the Roman infantry. We got this. And then when he jumps out and Jesus is like, no, you heard it wrong. We go, obviously, but then it makes perfect sense. So as we go forward, our preceding text to this tells the disciples that Jesus is leaving. And he's telling them that their hopes for a kingdom are going to be further delayed and also reshaped. These words of revolution, declaring himself to be the true vine in front of the central symbol for Israel of where the true vine is rooted, which is the temple, gives you the double entendre to point to the reality where they will face a world without Jesus physically present, while also pointing to him to an idea of a military rising, which is not what is meant, going towards a revolution they never planned. Therefore, the last words concerning delayed hope and a living faith in troubled times of a failed revolt. In essence, this is the last wish of the dying Messiah. Because once these words conclude is when he gets ambushed. And so the focus teaching following Jesus' exit, these teachings follow Judas's exit as a narrative point toward the cross while warning us about the encroaching night. Because in 1330 it says, almost a parenthetical statement, and now it's night. And so you have this moment the sun is setting. The sun is setting and it's starting to become dark because the sun is setting on Roman power and the revolutionaries' war. The sun is setting on coercion and factions. The sun is setting on us to be able to divide ourselves. The sun is setting on power through violence and the scapegoats needed to sustain that. Because the narrative points to resurrection. The narrative points to sunrise. The moment when Jesus is once again among the living. And so that's where we're stepping in this time that we can see the sun rise, but we're existing in nightfall. The sun is setting in the way we knew to come to this. For some of us, it might be the sun is setting on the tradition I was raised with. The sun is setting on the ways that I knew how to approach God. The sun is setting on the strict structures that always separated me from. The sun is setting on doctrine alienating people from me because I'd fight for that before I'd fight for another person. So that we can step into this moment of the true vine. And within the true vine, Jesus places himself in the role of Israel in verses 1, with God as caretaker. And then what's beautiful about John's depiction, because Paul and John imagine community a little bit differently, is within John's depiction of the true vine, we do not prune it. We do not remove things. That's God's job. Pruning is difficult. However, pruning is not punitive in this because it says God prunes everyone that produces fruit with the purpose of giving you the ability to produce more fruit, to live greater. So pruning, the pain, the structure of being able to say, I can be disciplined more, is seen in John as a blessing of God's interaction with your life. And we are removed from the job of controlling the community. Because even the act of being taken out, because you see it in the idea of Judas is removed just before this, you kind of get a picture of coming in that what we do is we become present, we sit, we stay with each other, and we trust that the same God who planted Jesus as a true vine is the one that will take away branches without life, is the one that will prune us so we can go forward. And as we go down to 15:8, it says to show. I like this one because of the tension how this one's translated, because it could be to show or it could be to become. I like both of them. So it's an idea of process that by this, my Father is glorified or honored, that you, and when it says you, it's you, not you, as in it's us, what we produce, not me and my relationship with God. So as a community, you produce fruit. And this will show that you are my disciple, or this is how you become my disciple. It shows a notion that we sometimes forget about being a plant. You're always growing, but you're never finished. You're always in process, but you don't arrive at some point that you stop growing. There's always the tension of being pruned. You never leave a garden unattended. It turns into a wasteland. And so we come into that idea of being the plant, and then Jesus goes through these ideas of obedience. That just as the Father has loved me, I've also loved you. And he says, obey my commandments, which equals to familial love for one another. And then it does a play with something that only would happen around the Messiah. The time of the Messiah is when joy would be complete. Even now, we talk about the time of the return of Jesus is when everything is set to right. All our hopes are pinned on the fact that Jesus was resurrected and is coming again. And so we speak of the fact of the hope being fulfilled. We get a taste of it now. This is the beauty of Sunday. When we come together, we get a foretaste of a community that transcends bloodlines, tribes, and traditions to say this is the beauty of what life could be. But it's a foretaste. It's not the full course. It's the appetizer. It's not the steak. In that, he says, the rabbis of that time said, when full joy comes, it's going to be in the time of the Messiah. And so in the middle of obey me, what is my commandment? That you love one another as I have loved you. He says, do you hear? The time of the Messiah is at hand. I tell you these things that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be whole, complete, full. To enter in complete is to learn how to love the new community defined by following Jesus. And he goes into the notion of friendship that points to the cross. He goes into the idea of a love that is powerless, a love that is, if you've been around theological discussions, it talks about the cruciformity. It's shaped by, molded in the image of the cross. So he says, you're my friends if you do what I command you. And he says, if one lays down his life for the other is the greatest mark of love. And at the end, he says again, love as I have loved you. But it's pointing to we should be marked as a community as a love that does not demand of the other but gives of themselves. So when someone makes us uncomfortable, when we feel it's a little bit odd, the act of a cruciformed love would give up its right before it gave up somebody else's ability to be present in a community. Identity outweighs rights, just like in marriage. If you demand your rights, your marriage is going to be rather rocky. You must first and foremost understand your place within the relationship, because that will shape the way you enter into discussion of rights. So for the first point, we're going to step into that moment of rifting, that moment that we dealt with the passage some, and now we're going to say, how do we step into this? I say we step into this by divine gardening and trusting the process. So point one, if you're keeping notes, divine gardening, true vines, and delayed hopes. Trust the process. This, I noted these just because we want to connect our things to the vision. This is the idea of being Jesus-centered. This is God's vineyard. Jesus is the vine. And they will produce life as we collectively move Christ's word. What does that look like? That means we're trusting the process for John. It means that we grow together and have the removing, pruning aspects left to the idea of Jesus. I love, when I used to work with YWAM, we got to meet a man who worked in Louisiana. Most people around the center part of Baton Rouge have been kicked out if you're a missionary street evangelist because they've had a bad reputation. They like to scream a lot, say, you guys are going to hell. One gentleman got invited into the brothels. He went in, he worked in the brothels, worked with the people, and it caused enough news when I was a part of YWAM that he was interviewed by a local Christian community. It was kind of like a TBN, a Christian network. And the first question they asked was, well, you're in the brothels with all these young naked ladies. He's like, yes. He's like, how'd you get them to put their clothes on? And the guy looked baffled and said, what do you mean? That wasn't my job. He said, God called me to let them know they were loved. If he wanted them dressed, he could tell them himself. And it was that moment that it's not my job to prune you. It's not my job to remove people. It's my job to walk with you as we head Christward. And we trust the process that we are always growing and never finished. That we recognize that all of us are at different places of growth. Some of you might not remember a time before Jesus. You were raised a Christian. You know Sundays are always earmarked for church. 10% is always earmarked for tithe, and you can quote any of the Bible verses to the point of almost obnoxiousness. This is where you've been born and bred. You might be at a different place than someone who said, I just heard of Jesus, seems kind of cool. Hi. Those are different places within maturity, hopefully. If you're at the same place maturity, we have a different conversation. But we're at different places of growth. So when we're going to make gracious space with each other, when we're going to be Jesus-centered, we have to understand that we are at different places of growth in such a way to make room for other people's growing. Because all of us are in process. The plant is never complete, never finished. It's always growing, always heading out. And that marks a healthy community that abides in Jesus. It's not a mark that we're doing it wrong. It's actually a mark that your place within this community is of vital importance. Because it's not the leadership team, the teaching team, the worship team. It's not the youth directors. It's in us. We have these positions simply because it helps us to facilitate growth. But if we are not growing, we have failed. And that leads to the second point. It's okay to get it wrong. Just keep moving. And that is the nature of gracious space. Because according to John's passion narrative, Judas was an opportunist. It said just before you get into these last teachings that Judas got upset over some of the oils put on Jesus' feet because he wanted to kind of ravage the coins that they collected, the treasury. It said he was pocketing it. And then right before this moment when he goes into this full teaching, it said that Satan has entered you. It's time for you to be removed. And he goes to trade out everyone. He didn't betray Jesus. We always focus on that one. He's been walking with the whole group for 3 years. He stabbed everyone in the back. It said he was an opportunist. He was taken like a branch, not producing fruit, as it says in the vine. But then we see Peter, and in light of the expected revolutionary Passover Exodus night, Peter's promise of absolute loyalty, which precedes this section, and then his swinging the sword to cut off a servant's ear, which follows this section, we see something beautiful. Jesus prunes him. In his promise of absolute loyalty, he said, I know this is where, this is what you feel. This is your truth. This is your moment. You're going to betray me in about 3 hours. But good on you. Thanks for the loyalty boost. And then at the end, he pulls the sword, cuts off the ear, and it actually is written in a way that Jesus almost loses it a little bit and says, what are you doing? This kingdom will not come by coercive power. You can't just kill the enemy. He was pruned. So gracious space creates the room for God to work in other people at a pace that is not dictated by any other person. And that is the nature of gracious space, is you're still present, you still abide, you're still with the other person, while you let God tell them to get their clothes on. And that's kind of it. If we volunteer to abandon that space of tension and say, because you do not move at the space of which I want, I can't be a part of you, we're literally cutting ourselves off from the vine. So no one acts to accomplish these things. They simply create room amongst all the disciples, even with Jesus, to move Christward. The rest was natural. And so we get to move into the last part, which is a little bit bigger. The act of remaining. And now the three places it tells us to remain in the passage, if you remember as we went over it, was we remain in Jesus, his word, and his love. That act of remaining comes into two commandments that are given throughout those acts of remaining, which is to remain and to love. And it's seen most explicitly if you throw up verses 10 to 12. The act of remaining is directly tied to the command to love each other. And this is something that's always been hard for me. I sometimes have a hard time humaning because humans are messy. You say weird things. I say weird things. My boss notices that when I'm at work. She looked at me and said, did you really, is this how you meant to come to me? I was like, I'll go back and I'll try again. And she's like, okay, that was better. It's not because I mean offense or harm or anything. It's just once in a while, things get crossed here. I'm in my world. And then it goes, and then everyone looks shocked at me. It's like, oh, those were bad things. Sorry. But it's in these moments to command and to love that this act of loving is said how we abide in his love. So even though I can be clumsy and awkward coming to a human, it also compels me to say if I'm not present with the people, and if you'll note, it says to one another, who's Jesus talking to? The disciples. What does this not mean? It does not mean it's a generic clause just to say as long as I'm a nice, kind person, I've hit this. This is speaking directly to the disciples about the disciples with hope of a growing kingdom, which means that first and foremost, we must measure this concept of love against, are we loving each other within this community? Because if we're not, then we're kind of ignoring the main function of the vine. And that's why I put that quote inside your guys' handouts. Thomas J. Ord is an amazing theologian, a gifted scholar, and he's written a few books on the idea of love, of relational holiness, community. And this is his saying after he studied the act of love throughout Scripture as a glowing framework. To love is to act intentionally in sympathetic and empathetic response to God and others to promote overall well-being. Now, if our actions do not produce an overall well-being, then it's not loving. Often I've seen very violent acts on the other saying, you are doing that which I do not like. I'm going to inform you I do not like it. This is love, because would you let your child hurt themselves? And we allow heinous acts to go this way. But if this is true, that Jesus calls us to love one another as he is loved, and that is how we remain in his love, so that his joy can rest in us and our joy can be complete, then we must judge our actions by, does it bring wholeness to the person that is the object of our love? Because if it brings control, if it brings pressure, if it brings force, then we might not be loving right. So as a community, if we go to point four, this is the test of abiding. As we look to the vine, to where it says, if any abide in me, they'll produce much fruit. Because apart from Jesus, we can accomplish nothing. If we want to test our abidingness, the connection to the vine, what we want to ask is this question. are you, are we, growing in love for the other people at Coast Hills? And this comes to a third part of our vision, that we're going to create gracious space by acts of generous love. So I'd say, this one would say, to the degree that we experience and demonstrate the reality, so a tangible felt presence, of being loved, wanted, desired, fought for, is the degree by which we have learned how to remain in Jesus' love. And that gets me excited. Because when I come to my spiritual practices, whatever it is, whether it's praying, whether it's reflection, whether it's community service, I consider it a spiritual practice, like when we got to meet Wednesday and clean up the ministry center, because it's an act of intentional community to help us grow. However, I would ask, do my spiritual practices draw me towards loving people? Or does it focus on loving a certain doctrine, a certain stance, a certain us against them? If it's not drawing me into the community, but allowing me to separate myself from the community. As Rob Bell says, we can always ask the question, are we a part of or seeing ourselves as apart from? My spiritual acts, my disciplines, my tradition should be weighed against, is it helping me to be a part of? And so in this time, we're going to enter into a time of response, the time for us to reflect and to consider, what does it mean for us to try to engage the community in such a way at Coast Hills? What does it mean for us to consider the wider Christian community that we're a part of and say that are connected to Jesus will no longer be measured with just a simple prayer, but we're going to say, are we growing in love? And that will be the measure of a healthy faith, even in troubled times. Audrey, that was your cue, homie. So over the next 5 to 10 minutes, Audrey will play music, giving us the opportunity to respond to three things. Three things to draw us to one another. One is tithing, because the act of tithing enables us to take care of one another. Because this is part of what we do in coming together. We tithe so that we can meet, we can gather as a larger thing, because there's no me and God in Christianity. It's us and God, and that's the tension. So we're offering you in this response time the ability to invest in the community, because that's what tithing is. You invest where you see life. Two, who is the one another in your life that God wants you to connect or reconnect with? We'd say in this time, pull out your phones, make a note of it, draft an email, send a text, but intentionally step towards the person in such a way that you have the opportunity to invest in somebody else's life over a cup of coffee, a meal, but that fact of letting them know that they are a part of the wider body. But you might be saying that I show up and I feel like I am not one of Coast Hills' one another's. I show up, but there's not the community. I show up, but take a risk. And pick up a Connect card from our welcome table, fill it out so that the pastoral team, the leaders, or just somebody has the opportunity to reach out to you. We'd love to. But we can't love who we do not know, and we can't know who will not let themselves be seen. Let yourself be seen. And in this time of response, we have the possibility to become that growing vine.